everyone is settled. Thank you, honorable members. The team from the Office of the Auditor General. Let me welcome all of you. The Director General of the Department of International Relations and his team, and members of the media who are here today, and citizens of our beautiful country who have attended this meeting today. Welcome to all of you. Honorable members, we come from a short recess wherein which we were expected to rest and do some constituency work. I hope you've been able to do that. I also know that some of our honorable members here have internal elections taking place. And all I can say is all of the best. You know, we from the ANC, we go through these processes every time. please, when you pray, also remember that we pray too. So all of the best, honorable members from the DA. I think now you learn how divisive elections can be. But yeah, be that as it may, honorable members, today is a very important meeting because we will be dealing with the annual report of the department and the report of the Auditor General on the financial performance of the department for the year. This is a very, very, very important exercise in executing our oversight mandate as Parliament. We will be expected, flowing from this exercise, to engage in the budget review and recommendation report, which is expected, in fact, we are expected to have submitted our report by the 21st of this month, which then means that flowing from this meeting next week, we will engage with our PRRR report and have to adopt that report for submission to the principals. Now, honorable members, from the Office of the Auditor General, we have Mr. Etienne Smith. We have who leads the team today? Is that so, sir? Who leads the team? Is it? Oh, okay. Mr. Etienne Smith is a senior manager. Mr. Vusim Sibi, who's a business executive in the Auditor General's office, and Mr. Eugene Zungu, who's the corporate executive who is indicated to lead the team today. Gentlemen, it always is a pleasure to have you here. You know, we appreciate always the fact that you are candid about these reports, and you are engaging in terms of especially highlighting the critical areas that the committee must focus on in executing its oversight mandate. Now, the expected trend, of course, is that we will continue doing that. Honorable members will be robust, as always, on the performance of the department. That we do, not only because we have a constitutional mandate, but because we are South African citizens, and it is in our interest to ensure that resources are correctly allocated and are used efficiently and effectively to achieve the department's stated objectives. Honorable members, please allow me to just highlight two or three issues before we get into our agenda. The past week has indeed gripped our attention on the matter of the visa application of the Dalai Lama, of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. Now, I am aware, honorable members, that we may be tempted to engage in that particular matter. My plea, as important as it is, but my plea is that we desist from doing so at this point because of the nature of the issues that we'll be dealing with today, that we focus for now on dealing with the annual report. However, it is important to highlight that this is a matter indeed that the committee must engage with robustly, because there has been a lot of controversy around this particular matter. Parliament hasn't had a voice, thus in fact hasn't aired its views on this particular matter. And I think this committee must, ask the tough questions. It must apply its mind, and it must pay attention to this particular matter and really, engage with it robustly. It is my proposal, as such, honourable members, that we find the time in our programme to engage with it appropriately and robustly. Call the department to account and explain to us what exactly took place there, for the committee then to engage and propose a way forward in dealing with this matter, especially because it is not the first time that there's this controversy around the Dalai Lama. So clearly there has to be a forward-looking approach that will, deal with the matter comprehensively and proactively in a manner that will not allow it to become the fiasco it has become. Okay. So please bear with me, honourable members. We will deal with it in the programme. In fact, you will have the opportunity next week when we deal with the committee programme to decide where exactly you want it as members of the committee on the programme. So please, I plead for your indulgence on this matter. Thank you very much. It looks like everybody agrees. Thank you. Honourable members, just yesterday we've seen statements by Prime Minister Netanyahu and representatives from Hamas announcing the release of Mr. Shalit Gilad, an Israeli soldier captured about 5 years ago. The release will be part of a prisoner exchange, where an estimated 1,027 Palestinians will be released in exchange for Mr. Shalit Gilad, or Gilad Shalit. Now, honorable members, let me congratulate these parties for taking such a forward-looking step. However, we must remain mindful of the about 5,204 other Palestinian prisoners languishing in Israeli jails, of which about 202 of them have never been charged. We hope that indeed this is the first step, honorable members, in many to come, of course, that will see an ultimate resolution to the problems afflicting that region. A special word of appreciation also must go to the Egyptian authorities for brokering this deal. We've noted as well that there have been reports by our own authorities here about the progress or lack thereof, DG, on the bailout loan to Swaziland. It is reportedly, according to Treasury, because the Swazi authorities have not yet signed the loan agreement as a result of the tough loan conditions imposed by our country. This is a matter, I believe, that the committee, together with the Portfolio Committee on Finance, should find the time to engage on. Honourable members, lastly, we are noting with trepidation the escalation of fighting in Somalia between the AU forces, peacekeeping forces, and the Somali military and Al-Shabaab. We hope ultimately, honorable members, that there will be a peaceful resolution ultimately to the conflict afflicting the Horn of Africa. Honorable members, let me thank you at that note and proceed into the agenda. At this time, we will have a briefing by the Auditor General on the financial performance of the Department of International Relations and Cooperation. I see a hand by just before you. Okay, sir.
No, I just wanted to also keep on noting the situation of Libya. We shouldn't leave it behind. While we've agreed on the NTC, but there's continuous violence that is taking place there. I would like you to, Honorable Chairperson, also to continue looking at the debt situation that is taking place around the European countries, and that you should try to put it on the agenda before we get afflicted about that debt crisis. That what is our view and how do you understand the economic situation there and how much impact does it have on South Africa so that we don't continue helping in bailing out countries. But what Honorable Pravin Gordhan has raised does raise our ear that we should be able to apply our mind. What does that situation imply for South Africa? Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. I do agree with you on the proposal that we discussed, the matter that you alluded to regarding the Dalai Lama. But I also thought maybe we, as a committee, could spend a couple of minutes when we discuss these issues, the international issues that you have raised. Also to maybe to discuss the recent elections in Zambia and what the implications are in the region, but also for Africa as a whole. As you realize, Chair, that on the continent, elections have not been a pleasant exercise in many countries, but I think the situation, the election in Zambia was an exemplary event that we should, the continent would emulate where you have a change of government, where there's no blood has to be shed. So I thought we should include that as part of the story. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, honorable members. Those are duly noted. There are also elections taking place in Liberia, as we speak, reportedly peaceful as well. So I think the tide of democracy is indeed blowing through the continent, and there is a consolidation of our democracy taking place in the continent. These are encouraging signs in terms of Africa moving forward on this. Thank you so much, honorable members. We will have the opportunity, as I indicated earlier, to put these on our program next week for further investigation by the committee. Thank you very much, Auditor General.
Thank you, honorable Chairperson. The focus of our presentation today will be looking at both the department, DECO, as well as the ARF, and will give the committee the audit outcomes for 10-11. But in addition to that, we'll also give a sense of what are the key drivers that have resulted in the type of outcomes that we'll be presenting, and we'll also give our reflections in terms of the areas that the department as well as the entity need to focus on for it to be able to move to an environment where it achieves a clean audit report. I'm going to hand over to my colleague, Vusi Msibi, who's the business executive, to take us through the details. And I think if the committee members have got any questions during the course of the presentation, we'll be happy to take those questions. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I'll go through the presentation. It is my view that the honorable members have copies in front of them. I'll go straight to the slides. This is our reputation promise as an office, that the objective of the Auditor General as a supreme audit institution is to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability and governance in the public sector through our audits, thereby building public confidence. Moving along to slide 3, this is just a national picture which covers all the departments as well as the entities, how they've basically fared in terms of audit outcomes. If one looks at the top line, which is financially unqualified audit reports with no findings, in terms of the departments, there's been a reduction from 4 to 3 from the previous financial year. Public entities, there's a reduction as well from 110, which received clean reports last year, but only 88 could maintain those audit outcomes. Then the third column is public entities that are not audited by AGSA. Once again, there's a reduction from 30 audits to 25. So these results relate to the second line, which is financial unqualified audit reports with findings in terms of compliance with laws and regulations. This explains the reduction in the top line, where comparatively from last year, 19 departments increased to 26, which entails that there's a regression in terms of the audit outcomes. In terms of the public entities, it's the same effect. There was an increase of 89 entities to 119. Similarly, with public entities that are not audited by us, there's an increase of 7 entities from 11 to 18. The reason for this movement is that as an office, for this particular period, we really focused on certain drivers in terms of compliance findings, particularly supply and chain management, wherein most of the entities were basically affected by those findings. And we also reported on material adjustments that were effected in the financial statement, because we are basically saying the financials that are submitted for audit, if they are not qualitative enough, there's a potential that they might result in audit qualifications. Then on the other type of opinions, which would be qualified opinions, adverse opinion, disclaimer of opinions, there's been a slight movement as well. Qualified opinions have reduced from 12 to 9 for departments. Then there's one department that was disclaimed in terms of its results, which is Public Works. Then on public entities, there was a reduction from 17 to 12. On adverse opinions, slight reduction from 3 to 2. Disclaimer of opinions, same, 5 to 4. Then in terms of the public entities that we are not auditing, there's been an increase of qualified opinions from 1 to 3, and an adverse opinion from one entity. The next slide basically will cover how the DERCO and the IRF fits into the national results. As you can see from slide 4, DERCO had a thin opinion last year, but it has received an unqualified report with findings on compliance with laws and regulations. Same with ARF, it was a thin opinion last year. It received a financial unqualified report with findings on predetermined objectives and compliance with laws and regulations. Then just to explain the issues below where we are reporting findings on predetermined objectives as well as compliance with laws and regulations, the details will be covered in the slides that are going to follow. Slide 5, we are comparing results over a three-year period, where we say for both the department and the entity, for the last two financial periods, which is 8-9 and 9-10, they were receiving financially unqualified with no findings. It's only 2010 and 2011 where both have received unqualified opinions with findings in predetermined objectives as well as compliance with laws and regulations. Slide 6, just to cover the drivers in terms of findings for the department. We reported issues under both findings in predetermined objectives and compliance issues due to the fact that when the department set up their strategic objectives, they were basically... they did not meet the criteria in terms of usefulness. By usefulness, we mean when we looked at the strategic objectives from the strategic plan, the SMART principles were not met. In terms of when we evaluated the project, the objectives, they were not measurable, they were not time-bound. So as a result, from the audit perspective, we couldn't really audit the performance information in those aspects. Under supply chain management, we looked at issues around procurement and contract management. That resulted in issues around irregular expenditure on certain transactions that we audited. We also looked at contract management in terms of evaluating the bid documentation, tax clearance certificates, etc., etc. Then the other issue that resulted in findings on compliance issues, there were material adjustments that were effected in the financial statements. And those adjustments were basically picked up during the audit process. But we need to emphasize the fact that they were corrected in the annual financial statements. That's the reason why the audit opinion was not qualified. But we are basically saying the review process in terms of the financial statements should be adequate and robust before those financials are submitted for audit in terms of the process. For the fact that the department has moved from a thin audit opinion to one with findings, we are depicting the fact that it has regressed in terms of the audit outcomes. That explains one with the arrow which is going down. In terms of the entity, the ARF, similar issues that affected DERCO, are the same issues we basically picked up from ARF. The SMART principles in terms of predetermined objectives were not met. As a result, we found those objectives not to be useful in terms of auditing the measurability, the time bound in terms of those strategic objectives. Once again, we are explaining the regression from thin audit opinion to the one with audit findings. Slide 10 basically captures the drivers in terms of what areas of material misstatements that we have picked up during the audit. For the department, capital assets, that's where we found issues that needed some corrections and adjustments. For both the department and public entities, we picked up issues around current assets, Then for the department, we made adjustment in terms of certain disclosure items in the financial statement. The last bar basically talks to irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. These were issues around the supply chain management as well as contract management that I've alluded to earlier. Slide 11 relates to adjustments as well. We are saying all these adjustments were corrected 100% in the financial statement. Slide 12 is talking to predetermined objectives. In terms of the audit, these are the criteria that we audit. One is non-compliance with the legislation, usefulness, where we say the SMART principles should be met, and the whole report should basically be in line with the requirements in terms of legislation. We have highlighted this as red, and we have engaged with management to say there needs to be intervention on these two areas. In terms of presentation and reliability of information, there's a plan in place which is in progress. That's why we've highlighted this one as yellow. So ideally, where we can put an opinion on predetermined objectives, all these criteria should be basically green to say everything meets the requirements, the objectives are useful, the information is supported by audit evidence, and it also meets the requirements and the framework in terms of the treasury framework. Slide 13, we basically quantified irregular expenditure that was incurred by the department. There was nothing reported under ARF, and in total, the value was 526,000 in all the transactions that we looked at. I need to raise the fact that we didn't audit the entire portfolio, but the 526 is mainly the transaction that we have the auditors focused on. Supply chain management issues. We are breaking down the areas that we have audited. We are also comparing the department with the national picture. I just want to highlight two or three areas where we say uncompetitive and unfair procurement processes. We had findings on the national aspect where 62% of the departments had issues, but the department, nothing was reported. Then under the line inadequate contract management, that's where we said the whole portfolio in terms of the department, there were issues 100%, versus 32% in terms of the national picture. That also applies to inadequate controls around the supply chain management. There was an issue or other audit findings in terms of DERCO, and the national picture is sitting at 19%. There were no issues in terms of ARF in all those procurement aspects that we looked at. Under non-compliance with laws and regulations, four issues that we picked up on, which relates to the previous slide. We had issues under strategic planning and performance management. I did cite the fact that the SMART principles was a big issue for us. Then the second one is annual financial statements and annual report, where we say there were material adjustments that were effected, that were picked up by the audit. Then we had issues around procurement as well as expenditure management. HR management was one of our focus areas. There's few issues that we picked up. For 2010-11, management of vacancies. We identified weaknesses in controls around that area. Performance management, where issues around certain senior managers not having signed performance contracts, then it becomes an issue to basically verify issues around bonus payments and other benefits to that effect. Then there were acting positions in key positions, but we had engagement with management. We know for the fact that some of these positions were filled, such as the CIO and the director in finance. So that aspect basically will be resolved going forward. But we'll keep on looking at this issue from the audit perspective. Then we also picked up issues around, there were issues in management of leave last year, but it was resolved this year. That's why we are picking 0%. So that has been resolved. Findings on IT controls. We do an audit under the general control environment around IT, where there's issues around IT governance, security management, user access management, service continuity, and program change management. Just to highlight a few drivers in those aspects, by security management, we are mainly picking up on issues around how does the department control the information that is going in and out of their system by way of firewalls, antivirus applications, etc. That is around security management. There's weaknesses in that aspect. User access management, it's issues around user profiles, password controls, wherein if a particular employee is supposed to have a profile that allows him to access certain areas of the applications in the system, it should be better to not be having other profiles to work on other areas. So it's one area that needs to be looked at. Program change management is issues around changing of master file data, wherein there needs to be controls to say if those changes are okay in the system, they should be authorized, they should be audit trained, and the person who's effecting the change. That is issues around general control relating to IT. I did cover all the four focal points that we looked at. It's procurement, HR management, IT management, as well as predetermined objectives. Slide 19 is progress made in implementing key controls. For 10-11, there is progress in terms of implementing key controls under governance. It's green. Under leadership, something is being done, hence we are reflecting yellow. Then under financial and performance management, particularly under predetermined objectives, we have highlighted as red to say there's intervention that needs to be made in those areas. This slide talks to the previous slide, which is 19, where we say there's been a regression in terms of both the department and the entity, in terms of the issues that I've highlighted, in terms of the plans and commitments that were made, some are in progress. That's why we are basically saying they are partially implemented for both the department and ARS. Thank you, Chairperson. This brings me to the end of the presentation.
Thank you very much, Mr. Msibi. Honorable members, Or perhaps let me just check first with the rest of the team members. Any additions or so from yourselves, Mr. Zulu? Okay. Okay. Thank you so much. All right, honorable members, let's. There's the report. It's open for interrogation by your good selves. It looks like everybody is fine. There are no questions, no nothing. No, I thought I'll be sending the Auditor General's team on their way. okay, thank you, Honorable Mokalapa, Honorable Dudley, and Honorable Ngonyama, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think the honorable members were still busy digesting this document. It was quite very technical. I must say, thanks to the AG office, I think they've made one of the most technical, you know, presentation to be so simple. Thank you very much for that. I think if you can go around making this audit report so simple, then I think honorable members and anyone who's involved in this process can be able to digest this quite easily. I think it's well noted that we have regressed as the department from our good clean audit reports of the previous years, but we will also get a response from the department in terms of the most intricate information and on why did we do this. In terms of what you said, in terms with compliance with the laws, because of you are saying that you have uncovered the irregular expenditure and the issue of contract management and the material adjustments, what would be the effect of that, and what would have prompted that to happen? Meaning, what would be the cause of those things? And have you got any particular examples that you can give us to that are tangible that you have uncovered from the department that it was because of this type of thing? And secondly, you have referred to the issue of capital assets. I think it's one issue that the portfolio committee has always been raising in terms of our asset management. We've always been calling for an audit of our assets, especially in terms of our foreign emissions and what's happening there. Where is the problem in terms of the capital assets? Is it locally in the department, or is it from our foreign emissions? The issue of the supply chain management, is it much of a problem from the department side, or is it much of a bigger problem in terms of dispersing funds for the ARF? Or is it just something that is general that you've picked up? Thanks, Chair. I'll leave it up to you and give the colleagues more bite.
Honorable Dudley, and then Honorable Ngonyama.
Thank you. I'm looking at page 14, and I'm not as brilliant as Stephen because I'm not getting it at all. So I'm seeing pink lines and blue lines and don't really know what that means. So, for example, awards to state officials and their close family members. It's a big pink line on portfolio and then 6% on national and so on as it goes down. And I would really like that explained a lot more clearly. What does that actually mean in terms of what's going on and where? Where are these things taking place? And simply, what does the pink line mean? That to me is going to need an awful lot more explanation for me to get what's going on there. Thanks. Sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I want to maybe concur with the last speaker in the sense that whilst maybe the attempt was to make it much simpler for our comprehension, but really I suppose we ought to have been taken through the definition of each and every color and right from the beginning so that we understand right from the beginning as the presentation is flowing. And to me that's one challenge that I had in understanding everything. And for instance, we talk about blue colors and stuff like that. I don't know myself, and what is the meaning of these colors? There's dark blue, there's and sort of light blue. And really, you know, it's so unfair. It's so unfair to us. And it's really so unfair to us, Chair. And but be that as it may, predetermined objectives, which seems to be a problem. And if I heard you correctly, what is the meaning of that? What are predetermined objectives? You have also referred to the SMART principles. And you've said that there hasn't been adherence to SMART principles. What are SMART principles? There are lines that you, slide 14, for instance, and there, as it was referred, the portfolio seems to be having more or less 100%, I don't know, that full line, and National has got 32. I'm not sure whether, does it mean that the department is much greater, in other words, it has performed worse than the National. And if that is the case, let these things be explicit to us. And they must be presented in the manner in which we understand, so that you say that the comparison that they are using is using National as an average, which is 32%, 62%, and so on, and maybe the department is far above National. And so it's really issues of that nature, so that you understand the intensity of the problem, Chair, and so that it's not fudged. We must understand it very, very clearly so that we can be in a position to engage with it. And so those are some of the issues that I have. What are predetermined objectives that seem to be serious? And various other issues, SMART principles, for instance, have referred to that. Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, I think you get the sense that page 14 in particular is a bit, is a tough cookie. Just untangle it for us. Okay, that's one. But also in relation to the other colors, you know. Okay, you are noted. You know, there's a. For instance, on page 15. Or maybe is it just a printing thing? Is that supposed to be red or green? I mean, this. You understand what I'm saying? So that makes it a bit difficult. It's simple if it's, you know, green, yellow, and red, straight plain. And we understand that as such. But I know there's another slide, for instance, where it's indicated that red is intervention required. You know. Yellow, there's work in progress, and then green, the department is doing fine. So just clarify those, and then the specific questions. Let me, before you proceed, let me give Honorable Mubu.
Thank you, Chair. Before I make my two comments, I think you will recall earlier this year, Chair, that we had a presentation from the Auditor General's office. And I think these colors and things were explained, if I recall very well. I think probably members needed to be reminded that when we get papers like this, we should read them and not just file them away. As usual, Chair.
Order, honorable members. Honorable Mubu, let me call you to order right there. Unless you have another point to make. No, all of you are out of order now. look, Honorable Mubu, I think all of us depart from the premise that if there is a member that does not understand something clearly, that must be clarified.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
No, you see, Chief, I'm still in the process of calling you to order. that's the premise from which we depart. So what is important is that these matters must be clarified so that when we move out of here, everybody is on board. In fact, I think the Honorable Dudley says she's not as bright as Honorable Mukhalava.
Let me clarify that, because I think I started to have the floor. Can
the
I
thing
continue?
Is, I attended that workshop, so that is why I understand these colors. So I must say, I must have preempted that one.
Okay.
But I attended the
workshop. It's fine, Honorable Members. Let's not indulge in that. I guess the point is, it's important that all of us go out here, understand, you know, what the report says, so that it enables us as honorable members to engage with the department going forward and understand what is expected of us as honorable members. Honorable Mubu, you have 2 points to make.
Yes, thank you, Chair. On the issue of international transfers, as you know, the department, I think, has the largest amounts of transfers that it makes internationally to international organizations, membership, subscriptions and all that. In connection with that, foreign exchange fluctuations during those transfers, do you find this has an impact on your reporting on the department and as compared to other departments? So my question is, to what extent do you think this has an impact, positive or negatively, on the department in your reporting on the department? Secondly, the payment of bonuses. You indicated that some of the senior managers had not signed performance agreements with the department, but bonuses were paid out to some of the members of staff. What penalties does the department suffer as a result of this? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. AG.
Thanks, Chairperson. I will cover these issues in the order from the first one up to the last one. Maybe to explain the color issue before I start with the questions. I wish to apologize up front. We should have explained this in detail. We just took it for granted that it will be basically be comprehensible for all the members. Please accept our apology. Light blue, basically, as you would see, there's 29 and 10. Dark blue is 10 and 11. Where we capture it in this form, we are comparing last year and the current period's audit results. That's why if one looks at the light blue, it's financially unqualified with no funding, which was last year. But the dark blue, which is 2010-11, it's financially unqualified with findings. That's the regression we were basically covering. So where there's blue, light blue and blue, we are comparing two periods. Similarly here, below we are explaining the colors. If you look at the blocks on the below right-hand block, we are saying green is financially unqualified with no findings. Yellow is financially unqualified with findings. Then red is qualified, adverse, and disclaimer. So that would be your bad opinion. Maybe let me start with slide 14. Well, what we are trying to achieve with this slide is basically to see how the portfolio contributes to national outcomes. But it gets difficult for a portfolio like DERCO, where there's DERCO and one entity. So it basically distorts the whole picture. Because if it was a department with a number of entities, we are basically trying to say how are the results for that portfolio in terms of the national picture. So to explain the 62%, we are basically saying 62% of all the departments have issues in that area. Then DERCO, being one department, if there's an issue in that aspect, it will show 100%. So meaning DERCO is contributing to to those percentages in the national picture. I'm not sure if my explanation is clear. But if one was dealing with portfolios like transport, you would see bigger percentages going that way because it has a lot of entities under the department.
Let me just check with you. Let's take the very first line there. Does it mean, in terms of the national, DIRCO contributes 0% to the national picture of 6%? Is that? Yeah.
It means DIRCO has a finding. So DIRCO is part of the 6%.
Okay.
If it was zero, it would mean DIRCO has no finding.
Okay.
So where there's a red bar, it means there's a finding for the department. I'll start from question one, compliance issues. Maybe just to explain the drivers under those compliance findings. The department had issues, for example, like the accounting officer did not report the outcome of the disciplinary proceeding relating to financial misconduct as required by Treasury Regulation 4.3.1. So if there was such a case in the department, there needs to be processes to report such. So it's non-compliant in terms of that treasury regulation. Under annual financial statements, there's a section in PFMA that the financial statement should be prepared in line with the accounting framework to the fullest extent. So the minute we pick these findings from the audit process to say this and that needs to be factored in the financial statements, it means those issues are significant, they are material. If no adjustments were effected, the audit opinion would have been qualified. So once again, it's a non-compliance in terms of the legislation. Same applies to strategic planning and performance management. We covered issues around quarterly progress reports in terms of achieving measurable objectives and targets to the executive authority. Once again, that is the requirement of another treasury regulation, 5.3.1. So those are the non-compliance issues that we are reporting. There was a question on predetermined objectives. Predetermined objective basically is the start of the process where the department or entity would say these are the strategic objectives that we want to achieve for a particular financial period. They are supported by the budget. So as they expend the resources, you need to report on those achievements, objectives rather, that you have set up front. So by SMART principles, we mean those objectives should be specific, measurable. They need to be achievable, realistic, and time-bound to say, after 9 months, we would have achieved A, B, C, D, and it's measurable from the audit perspective. So if we say they are not useful, some of them are ambiguous. You can't really link them to the resources that have been expensed to that specific objective. So that should cover the SMART principles. And again, it's legislated in terms of the framework to say for the department to meet the framework, it set out how they should set out those objectives, how they should link to the budget, as well as reporting that predetermined objectives, performance information. The next question was on capital assets. Capital assets, the audit findings that we normally capture during the process is where it's assets relating to foreign missions as well, where when we test the asset register, we do it two ways. If we pick up assets from the asset register, we need to verify those assets from the floor. Same applies to when assets are bought, purchased, the asset register needs to be updated. So there's weaknesses in controls around those principles, where if we pick up new assets from the floor, trying to trace them from the asset register, it's not updated, and vice versa. To you, Chair, there was a question on supply chain management, disbursing fund for ARF, whether it's particularly for ARF or across the department. We cover a number of issues around supply chain, taking into account that the objective is basically the process should be transparent, should be equitable, it should enable the government to achieve efficiency, economic, and all the three is under performance. So we look at several issues. So there was a question around, again, issues around close family members. It's an issue we picked up where we say if an award is made to officials and close family members, there should be an audit trail to say those officials have declared their interest. They were not part of the decision-making structures when those awards were made. So from the audit perspective, if we don't get that audit documentation and audit evidence, we can't basically say those awards were fair, transparent, and what have you. But the determination is that there were awards that were made to officials and close family members as far as the transactions that we tested.
I just want to get this clear. For those, what exactly is the situation? Is it that for those awards there isn't sufficient documentation, or there is sufficient documentation, you are just highlighting it? What exactly is the issue?
Thanks, President. Well, what we have done basically, this was part of the horizontal audit where we're auditing all the departments, where we're checking if awards were made to close family members and officials. So it's not an issue for DERCO only, but it's a wide audit that was done on a larger scale. So there were awards that were made, but we couldn't satisfy ourselves in terms of those documentation. That's why we raised it as a finding. Yes. So I'm not sure if I've covered well this ARF issue, but if members are not happy, they basically raise the question again.
Chair, I'm sorry, I just wanted to cover the exchange rate losses and gains that one of the honourable members asked. And there's definitely, that's part of the DERCO process and in business, transfer of money to 124 missions annually. So definitely the budget takes place is done at a certain exchange rate. And when the actual transfers take place annually throughout the year, every month, that and the payments take place at the mission level, the actual payment exchange rates are different than the budget, but the budgeted exchange rates. So there are definitely exchange rate surpluses and losses that are accounted for in the records of DERCO. That's the one side of the exchange rate losses and gains. And also at the year end, the bank balance of DERCO is converted at the year end balance. So there are also an exchange rate difference, a loss or a gain. But that is also accounted for in the financial statements of DERCO annually.
For you, Chair. Maybe we can cover the management of exchange losses. I don't know. From
treasury perspective? Well, it's accounted for in the income statement or the appropriation account of Turkish, that forms part of their vote. So if there is a loss, for instance, it will be part of their vote, and they will have to carry the expenditure. And if it is a gain, the surplus will go to treasury. They will have to carry it against them. It will be a surplus that will be surrendered again to treasury at the end of the day.
Maybe last question on my side, performance agreements. At the end, we'll cover the detail in terms of bonus payments. I was just explaining the principle that if there are no performance agreements, it gets difficult to test the authority for whatever payments that will flow, whether in a way of a bonus or if it does happen, it would be irregular. So I'm not sure at the end if there were specific issues on bonus payments.
Chair, through you, there were no problems with the actual bonus payments. Is that we just needed, and we couldn't find the specific signed contracts. But the bonus payment, there was sufficient audit evidence to support all the payments to the officials.
Isn't that a contradiction? Because if performance bonuses are paid without a contract, isn't that in itself...
Now, the department could give us supportive alternative information and confirmations that the employees were actually doing what they're supposed to do, and they did qualify for the bonuses. Now, the performance contract was just one of the supporting documents that were required, so they gave us alternative documentation to support the payment of the bonuses. Yeah, there was no problem with that.
Well, Chair, in slide number 10, and the areas of material misstatements in financial statements, there's the area on, I think, the question of capital assets and current assets. I take it that that falls under the explanation given to us on the question of the register. Am I right? Now, the other one is unauthorized, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And can we get more clarity on that? Especially as it relates to the financial statement itself. Does it mean that you identified it in the financial statements as an item which was not disclosed, or can I get more on it, Chair?
Yeah, and perhaps what this relates to, you mentioned the figure of 526K. As part of that package there. So do you have any, is it possible for us, for you to tell us where this emanates from? Perhaps a breakdown would be fine as well.
Thanks, Chair. On slide 10, I just want to cover other disclosure items and also irregular and fruitless. Under irregular and fruitless, if that is incurred by the department or entity, it's a requirement of the accounting framework that it has to be disclosed. So it's part of the adjustments that was done through the audit process. So in other disclosure items, there were a disclosure note of leases that was materially a statement. So it had to be changed in the financial statement as well. So it's mainly we are covering material adjustments that were done in the financial statements as a result of the audit process.
Can I follow up to you? Okay. No, if it can be maybe explained further, the adjustment process during the audit and the process, who does that? Is it done by DECO, or is it done by an external and this adjustment? I take it that you discover that there's a mistake here, there's a mistake there, and therefore do adjustments on these areas. Who does that? Who discovered that? And because you say it was adjusted and so on, and who adjusted that? Thank you.
Okay, through you, Chair. Maybe I can just try and very briefly just paint the picture of the audit process in that at the end of May, the department will give us a set of financial statements with a view that by the end of July, we would have wrapped up our audit and in the position to express an opinion. So during that period of 2 months from the time that we receive a set of financial statements, we will audit the numbers that are given to us. And we will identify any gaps. And as we identify issues, we advise management that we've picked up, this is the amount you've disclosed in the set of financial statements, R1 million of assets, but our audit work indicates that there's a significant difference between the amount that you've disclosed and the assets that we're finding through the audit process. So we keep a tally of those of these items during the course of the audit. Then it is up to the client or up to the auditee to say we are going to make the adjustments because we agree with the facts that you've identified as auditors, or we're happy to leave with a qualification, we're not going to make any adjustments. So in the case of DECO, we went through that process, we identified the various differences or misstatements, and then they chose to make the necessary adjustments in their financial statements, which is then the picture that you see depicted in slide 10. So those are the areas, I guess, with the exception of, what is the one in the middle, just before irregular expenditure? Yeah, but basically all the key areas that we highlight in terms of our presentations, there had to be material adjustments in the DECO environment. So I hope that explains the process that we go through as auditors here. I think Etienne will just talk to the details of the 526,000 that is sitting in irregular expenditure, and I'd just like to make some reflections.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, just to clarify again that the irregular expenditure was also picked up during the audit by the auditors, and the breakup of that is there wasn't 3 written quotations to the amount of 227,000. That's also supply chain management related. There was no tax clearance certificate for amount of 58,000, and there was a no point scoring evaluation document to amount of 240,000. That makes up the 500,000 irregular expenditure. Thank you, Chair.
Just one point I want to make on adjustments in the financial statements. It's a normal process during the audit that there'll be adjustments. But we are basically saying it shouldn't be material, the magnitude, to an extent that we have a view that materially the financials are not qualitative. So if we are at that point, we report such issues. But it's a normal process where we find classifications and that and that.
Thank you, sir. I think now I'm clear about the process. Now the other, maybe flowing from that, Chair, And because if you look at that slide, there's clear demonstration, as the AG was indicating, where adjustments were made. I take it that on the area that you were referring to, which is right in the middle, it's the revenue area, and that there was no adjustment made. And what is the meaning of that?
I think through your chair, I think in principle it means that if we look at the item of revenue or the income that is generated by the department, there were no significant issues that we identified during the course of the audit. So which means that both the department or the public entity didn't have to make any adjustments. So I guess the ideal is that when you look at that slide, we shouldn't have any graphs there. Or what we normally do is that if there were no material misstatements, we make those graphs green. So the ideal is that you need to have 100% of green reflected there, because then that talks to the quality of the financial statements that were submitted to us to audit. And it also talked to the quality of the information that the department reports during the year. And I think it's an important discipline that needs to be implemented within the department and the entity to make sure that there is that regular and thorough review of the information that is being prepared during the year and subsequently being prepared for the audit process. I think through your chair again, I think the other aspect that was touched on is the issue of asset management. And it is an issue that has been cause for concern for us as auditors within the department, and it definitely was an issue in respect of the 10-11 audit as well. And as my colleague said, that the issue resides both at the missions, when we do mission visits and we verify assets there, and it also resides in terms of the monitoring within the department itself. And I think these are issues that we've discussed with management, and we have firm belief that they are going to be addressed effectively as we go forward. But it's an issue that needs to be highlighted and be noted that it can put the department at risk in future of regressing significantly if it's not being addressed vigorously. I think the last thing that I also just want to comment on is the issue of ARF disbursements. In terms of the year under review, which is 10-11, there were no disbursements that were made by ARF. I think the last time any disbursements were made was during 09-10. So there were no concerns as such in terms of either issues of the validity of any disbursements that were made by ARF, because there were none that were recorded in 10-11.
Honourable members, any further questions? None. Are we clear? It sounds like Honorable Ngonyama is a bit more comfortable after this explanation.
Chair,
in terms of the misstatements and so on.
Yes, I am comfortable. I suppose, Chair, that we'll have an opportunity to interact with
that. That's where we're going.
Thank you.
That's where we're heading. Okay, no, thank you so much. In the absence of any further questions, clarities from the honorable members, I wish to take this opportunity to thank the Office of the Auditor General for splendid work, as always, gentlemen. The only criticism I have against you, though, is it has always been gentlemen. Hopefully we will... That's coming from another male. Hopefully we will see a gender mix, a healthy gender mix But we understand. We do not hold you accountable for that. The Auditor General himself, the warm body in the position, must take responsibility. But thank you so much for the splendid report, gentlemen. We will certainly have further engagements on this report. I think it requires that that we have further engagement and closer scrutiny of the department. But thank you so much, and all of the best. Honourable members, shall we call for a 5-minute break? Please let us be back in 5. Thank you.
Couldn't withhold, conceal your
you're surprised at some of the stuff that was said, and at times you could see that, no, Mr. Mutli disagrees with what is happening here. which is fine. If anything hasn't been set up, appropriately or correctly, it's your chance to explain to us how things really are from your perspective. Okay. So, without much ado, DG, thank you so much. Please, the floor is yours.
Thanks so much, Honorable Chair, and members of the Portfolio Committee. As you correctly say, I have colleagues from various disciplines of the department to assist me, because some of the information I might not be very familiar with, since this is a period when I was out of the country. It's not an excuse for me not being on top of things. Other members, you have a slide presentation with you, very voluminous, but not of pages. I will not go through all of them. I will just, refer to one or so few slides so that we can start discussions. What we thought we should do first on our chair, this is annual report 2010-2011. We thought we should take you first through the economic context so that you should understand or at least appreciate the overall strategic approach we are taking at BIRCO in terms of our work. Then we look into multilateral issues, Africa bilateral, Asia, the Americas, Europe. We'll take you through various branches of the department. But we thought to create a context, let's go through economy so you can understand the extensive relationship we have. The first slide, I really wanted to ask our members to look into this, because then you get the shift, how we shift policy, why is the policy shift. We thought we should take you through this first slide, first to see our export by regions. You can stop at the top of the region, Eastern Europe. You can look at the figures there, North Africa, Pacific, Mercosur, East Africa, West Africa, ASEAN, EFTA, Middle East, SARC, NAFTA, SADC, Northeast Asia, the Chinas, meaning Hong Kong and Greater China and then European Union. Now, we put those slides there, as I said, because I think when you go through the slide, then you'll understand the orientation of our foreign policy and where we need to deploy more resources. You look both at the exports and the import, and I'm sure from that picture, you can begin to understand, you can begin to see who are we trading with and who are we exporting with around the world for the last couple of years. What is very obvious from that slide is the growing trade between us and Asia. In the next slide is just to show the growth in volume of world merchandise, trade versus GDP around the world. You could see that trade is really galloping. There is so much advance in trade, which presupposes that we may also, as South Africa, begin to do more in opening up of our markets. Then the next slide is sort of an analysis of the previous two slides. With whom are we trading? Now, from this slide, if you take the left block, you could see the trade between South Africa and Asia. From the 90s, it was 13 billion. And then it is 13%. Then you can see there's really moved tremendously towards 28. And at the same time, you can see the trade between us and Western Europe. From 51, it has now shrunk towards 28. And the trade between North and North America is almost steady. And the trade between inter-Africa trade is almost the same. The Middle East, not major changes. The biggest change you can see there is our trade between South Africa and Asia. And that's a very significant. Then the next slide, it shows the growing FDI from developing Asia into Africa. How much investment we get from Asia. You'll see later on, honorable members, the number of missions which we have in Asia and part of the world. You can see from that slide that South Africa has been a very significant investor in the continent, but followed by China, Malaysia, India, and others. This has become very increasingly in the last members, is the FDI outflows from developing and transitioning economies by region. Where is the money flowing? Where is it outflowing from where to where? You could see the position of the South and Southeast Asia in terms of that flow. Now, on the eighth slide, honourable members, is the FDI outflow, top 20 economies during the period we are talking about. Very significant is the issue of Hong Kong, China, Japan, and the Russian Federation. In other words, sort of the BRICS members in terms of the outflow. And then the ninth slide is a composition of private capital flows to developing countries. How much capital has been flowing? You can see the FDI, foreign direct investment, is by and large still the major portion. But in Africa, we saw a bit of increase in terms of portfolio, especially in 2008, 2009. We saw increase in terms of portfolio investment and other investments. But by and large, FDI, especially in mining or extractive industries, still by and large the biggest one. Then the 10th slide drives things home in terms of another very important area. Now, this is tourism. Part of DIRCO's responsibility or objective is to attract investment, to open up market, but also to promote tourism. Now, we get the figures under the period we are reporting on. SA continues to outperform global tourism growth, which grew by 6.7% in 2010, while tourist arrival in South Africa grew by 15.1%. But very significant is to go into the changes in the region of the tourism flow globally. It is very important. And I think in this context, honourable members, recall the impact on inflows because of the World Cup. Now, on the next slide is where are these tourists from? Where are these tourists from? You will see significant growth. Of course, all over the world, there's been growth in tourism. But we are beginning to get new arrivals in Central and South America. So, whilst Europe have remained, by and large, our major source of tourism, but you can see there is a significant improvement from Central and South America and also Asia. So there is a very significant increase in tourism from those countries in terms of arrivals. Of course, by and large, Africa still is a major source of visitors to South Africa. On the 12th slide, as I said, you should demonstration that the Americas and Central Asia grew fastest in the period that we're talking about. And this is an area, that's why we have worked very hard on our members to increase our footprints in Latin America and to consolidate our footprints in Asia. We'll see later on where we are, but also to work very closely with those who have the means to ferry tourists in and out of South Africa. But that slide 12, it shows the those who come by air and by land, those come from Americas, Australasia, and Europe. But as I said, later on you could see the increase from Latin America and Asia. Now, these are our neighborhood. SADC remains our neighborhood. And you can see who visits South Africa from time to time. One of the members will tell you, will ask me that, but Lesotho's population is around 1.8. How do you have 1.4 million Lesotho's within South Africa? I think it's an issue that all of the members know very well. The regular visit in and out of South Africa for various activities, these are captured as a tourist. But we could see in our neighborhood, those bordering South Africa are still by and large the major one. Although, in terms of air, UK, USA, Germany still remain the major source of what you call. But we believe that with time we'll see more arrivals from India, from China, and from the ASEAN countries. So, Honourable, there was a sort of a context so that when we come to our work, there's a clear appreciation of where our interests are growing and for what reason. I'll just go straight through the slide on the branch multilateral itself. The first achievement was that South Africa was re-elected to a non-permanent seat in the U.S. Security Council for 2011-2012 term. At the same time, we were also elected into the AU Peace and Security Council seat, and we just assumed in the last few months the SADC organ on political security. But this in itself provides South Africa with a unique opportunity to coordinate efforts in the three organizations primarily mandated for the Ministry of Peace and Security. For us, this is a very, very significant coincidence or timing. And of course, we'll continue with our efforts of peace resolutions in both Madagascar, Cote d'Ivoire, and Libya. We just had over the weekend the 11 Madagascan delegations, different parties, in our building. On slide 16, we make the point that the UN Secretary General had launched in August last year a high-level panel on global sustainability. And our president and President Tarja Halonen of Finland were appointed to co-chair of this panel. And indeed, in a few weeks ago, President Zuma was presiding over this panel in the GA. But also because we continue to play part, very significant part in G20, where our president again co-chairs the development working group with South Korea and France. On page 14, we're making a point that whilst we do all these questions, we don't forget to take care or support those who are who have been meeting calamities, like the people in Benin, Niger, Chad, flooding, Chile, Cuba, Haiti, and the tsunami and earthquakes in Japan, that we do also extend our assistance to those countries. And on 18, the world still asks us to play a role, even in the areas of nuclear security. And as an only African country that takes part in these issues, we begin to raise issues of great concern on the proliferation and areas around the nuclear security, but also stressing the questions of peaceful use of nuclear energy. And on page 19, Honourable members, you know that the African Commission on Nuclear Energy, the third parties there, have asked South Africa, and South Africa as the host of the African Commission on Nuclear Energy, AFCON. So we are making some preparations to host this important office in South Africa. And then I will go to slide number 21, where I want to talk with a bit of challenges on what we face. Now, the honourable members will recall that the cabinet took a decision last year, part of it being to identify South Africans and second them to international organisations, especially like in SADC and AU, etc. We are making a point that we are still not coordinated by and large as a government to utilize these opportunities. There have been a lot of requests for South Africa to second or send experts in these organizations. We hope it's an issue that will be taken very soon with the Treasury to create a special facility where all government departments and South Africans can access for secondment abroad. It's a something that is in the process. Then on Africa, generally speaking, we have 47 missions, oral members, in Africa. You recall in 1994, we had something about 18 or so. Now we have 47. It is hoped that in the near future, we shall have a mission in each every African country. Now, oral members, I'm sure you are aware why we have such a huge footprint in the continent. Is there a value of such a huge footprint in the continent? If you go to the questions of footprint, around them, as you will still recall that Africa is by and large, in terms of narrow national interest, where most of our companies, whether parastatals or private, are making a huge returns in the investment. But also because that's where we deploy most of our resources in terms of peace and security, questions of elections, and post-conflict programs. On slide 25, when you talk about Africa Multilateral, and that is Ambassador Kujo's file, and I'm glad that she's on my left-hand side. As the AU, as Africa, I think we have made, set up and made a number of very important advancements. We have ratified the AU Charter on Democracy, Elections and Governance. We have provided technical and logistical support to the Pan-African Parliament. We still continue to do so. And I hope all our members are taking particular interest on this issue. SA chairs, Sadaka chairs, the ministerial committee that had successfully finalized the scale of assessment recently in November. And at the AU summit in Kampala last year, the AU endorsed the meeting for the summit for the diaspora that will take place next year, 25th of May, in South Africa, the diaspora conference. Again, that in that summit, President Zuma lobbied very hard for the support for us to host the square kilometer array. And we must say we are very humble with this continual support from not only AU, but some of the countries in the south. South Africa continues to be part of the CAHOSC, and as you correctly, as the members know, we hosted the 2010 FIFA World Cup. And on the other front, we continue to lobby for some of our distinguished South Africans to be member of very important bodies. Like last year, Dr. Frini Junala was appointed into the executive board of the anti-corruption for the second term, and Mr. Sloth Nelson on the African Committee on Rights and Welfare of the Child. And as I said earlier on, that President Zuma was then requested to endorse, he was endorsed to on the question of priority for cross-border infrastructure, which he lobbied very hard for in the AU, to unlock the potential of the continent. And on the slide number 28, we have hosted successfully in the reporting period second and third SAKU Heads of State and Government Summit in July and March, July last year and March this year. And South Africa played a prominent role in coordinating government participation in the review of the RISGP. And we did support when Zambia was the chair. Of the organ, we did give them a very good support. And you remember, Honourable Members, the issue of Zimbabwe in Victoria Falls. And on slide 29, I was just going to give a point of our participation of the organ in assessment mission to Seychelles, Mozambique, Tanzania. This is part of the work that we'll be doing, especially because, Honourable Members, you recall that we have agreed now on the issue of plan on action on maritime piracy. The AU summit in Angola this year endorsed that plan, and perhaps we may be able to later in the coming months to deploy our resources in the Indian Ocean to protect the sea lanes coming southwards from the Horn of Africa. And we continue to be facilitated on the Zimbabwean issue, and we did help SADC to commission the early warning system. And our delegations, and some of you honorable members, you took part in the elections in Mauritius, Tanzania, and observed elections in Guinea-Conakry. South Africa also have been, as I said earlier on, selected to be in the Peace and Security Council of the AU until next year. And we continue to take part and support peace in the DRC and Sudan. We've been asked repeatedly to send our forces to Somalia, and this issue we hope to be resolved in the near term. The challenge that we face is that we are underrepresented in the African Union structures. And also in the NIPAD and IRM structures. For some reason, other members are not able to get South Africans to work in these structures. Hence, I think maybe we through secondhand policy will be able to attract or at least encourage more South Africans to go and work in the structures so that it can help us. I think that's part of the reason also why, as you are aware, that the government put the candidature of Minister Dr. Dlamini Zuma to compete or to contest the chair of the AU next year, January. And then, nearer home, on slide 34, we have to report to you, honourable members, that SADC Secretary has a capacity program. Part why we are such a delayed, unlike other RECs, is because we see the capacity constraint at SADC. But also what we need to do with SADC, like, sometimes is to clarify the role as advisory, not decision-making. Sometimes we have a bit of challenges with SADC Secretariat, where they interpret their role differently from what member states are. But also the Secretariat is advocating for establishment of a SADC custom union as soon as we can. Although some of us, South Africa and other countries, know we need a lot of technical work to do and a lot of technical work to do before you go and deal with the issues of custom union. It is part of our agenda, it is part of the decision that we should move towards the custom union in SADC areas. I want to come back to the issue of those countries that visit us, but also to indicate that in a grade, Angolans are among the biggest spenders in South Africa. I think that must go on record, that we saw that Angolans are real, real big spenders in South Africa. And so are the people from the DRC, Mozambique, and I think Zimbabwe also. The question is, are we creating conditions favorable for them when they come to South Africa so that although they spend, but they can enjoy the country? I think this is an issue we'll be discussing with the, both tourism department and the provinces of entry to these countries. And part of the achievement on the Africa bilateral is the, at least to some extent, the movement made on the peace process in Madagascar. They have just signed, Ambassador Kucho, I think 3 weeks ago, the roadmap to democracy. And they were here over the weekend to reconfirm, commitment to move towards that route and resolve the issue of the former president, Ravalo Manana, and to make sure that we can then create conditions towards elections there. We, President Zuma, did go to Egypt and next year, last year, when the head of state was still there. And a part of that was because we wanted to make sure that in Egypt, like Nigeria, Algeria, Kenya, are very, very strong. These are the key states in the continent. And we did establish, as part of expanding our footprint in the continent, places with our human principle, in fact, a mission in those countries. On slide number 38, honourable members, I just indicate the work we've been doing in South Sudan on the post-conflict or post-reconstruction in the Sudan. We're still playing a role there, together with the former President Mbeki, in terms of helping to resolve the outstanding issues there. But there was many visits in the refugee period 2010-2011 in and out of Sudan to assist them to where they reached in July this year, the new state of Sudan. We must say, considerable resources were really deployed to make sure that South Sudan meets its deadline of the 9th of July as a free state. Although it has been resolved, we still continue to work in that area. In the Asia Middle East, Excellencies, there are our missions. We have about 33 missions in the Asia Middle East. You can see where they are. Basically, the entire Southeast Asia, the entire South Asia, and part of the North Pacific have our presence. We do have towards the Pacific in Wellington, we opened a mission 2 years back, and in Fiji and Canberra. And so we're able to service the Pacific. There's a tendency among people in Africa to forget the Pacific, forgetting that votes count. In a UN system, a vote from a tiny Pacific state of 10,000 people is the same as a vote of anything. So what we did in South Africa, we have to make sure that we deal with those countries in the Pacific. So we have about 33 missions in the Pacific. Significant development in this area was South Africa joining of the BRICS, following President Zuma's visit to Brazil, China, Russia, and India. Very, very significant. We discussed this thing around members before. What is it that we seek from BRICS? But very important also is the declaration with Beijing to establish a comprehensive strategic partnership with China. If we have time, we'll try to unpack what is this comprehensive strategic partnership with China, what does it entail. But also we recall that we had a very successful participation in Shanghai. I think a couple of millions of people passed through our pavilion in the Shanghai. On the slide 43, it's just nearer taking home our trade with BRICS countries. We had need to do this from time to time, members, because these are growing economies. And they, together with Mexico, with Turkey, with Indonesia, and Vietnam, we think these countries will reshape the global economic landscape in a couple of years to come. We'll come back to those others later on. But this has to show the significant growth in our trade. Continuously of export from 2007 to 2010, almost doubled with the BRICS countries. Of course, you can also say that even the import. But what we have realized in the last 2 years is that we are sending more and more exports to these countries. And we are catching up. Almost, we hope that in a few months' time, we can balance both exports and imports in these countries. But the next time, we're just trying to show the balance now, very clear at home with this. And from this, you can see that by and large, China, Hong Kong, that's where most of our trade with the BRICS countries is going. There is a lot of work we're dealing with Russia in terms of trade and Brazil. With India, we're moving more and more towards value add, both ways of the trade. So you can see the balance coming. But we believe that working very hard on the Indian market gives a lot of possibilities. Now move towards the Middle East, to the Gulf countries. Gulf countries, other members, they come to South Africa. They're among the biggest, the highest spend. If you have one sheikh in Cape Town, I can assure you, they will spend less than $10 million. But if you have Jerry and Cujo, we spend around 2,000 rand. But these sheikhs will spend a lot of money. The question we're discussing is, are we taking care of these sheikhs? Mr. Basson, the back here, chief director in my office, and tell more stories about it. I've been working with Mr. Basson for the last 15 years on the Asia 5, but we see a lot of them coming. But what is also significant for us is the arrival from Saudi Arabia and the UAE. So we should take care of them. And then more Israelis coming into South Africa. In the next slide, we just show the trade between us and the Gulf. By and large, is in the oil area. But we begin to see in terms of machinery from South Africa. A lot of Saudi companies have a project in Saudi Arabia, UAE, and they import the equipment from Saudi Arabia. That's partly why it explains why we send a lot of value-add merchandise into the Gulf areas. We don't want to leave this thing behind because, as I say, because of the huge programs and projects, almost every of the Gulf countries. You go into Yemen, you go to, especially Oman, UAE, Qatar, Kuwait, you see a lot of cranes and cranes and cranes all over the desert there. And this is where I think we need to send most of our goods. The branch was engaged, all our members, with Syria last year with a view to increase relations between us and Syria. Syria and Iran are very significant economies in that part of the world. And we had a couple of visits from there, including establishing of the business forum with Syria. And an attempt to ensure regular inflow of FDI was for us to discuss with the Omani and many of these Gulf countries to say, why don't you put a dedicated facility to invest in Africa? You have these trillions and trillions of wealth fund, but why it's not possible for you to dedicate some of them? So you are beginning to see, honorable members, you are beginning to see dedicated private funds from these countries towards Africa, mostly towards infrastructure. Of course, they also do move into things like real estate, some of them even mining, you know, platinum and others. But we thought that this is a significant role where we can move on. And of course, it may also be good, you can match them with our own funds. But we do have some challenges, partly because of understanding of our missions. We have very difficulty, honorable members, to send people to the Gulf. For example, still have a problem sending women to Saudi Arabia. But we hope that maybe with the Arab Spring, things will change, and we can enable some of... I see now women can drive, although under in Saudi Arabia, but we still have a big problem then. But we do hope through our outreach, minister has been going to a number of provinces and universities to try to attract young people to join Birko. We hope that we can get more and more of them who could do these countries. Of course, the budget is a problem. Birko still spend around 95% of in the missions administration, only 5% to do operations. And then we have not seen significant inflow of FDI from the Gulf, despite that it was over $1.2 trillion, but we have not really made a huge dent in terms of inflows into South Africa. They complain about the absence of the bilateral investment protection agreement, which has been the DTI, but now that it has been lifted, we hope that the environment will be better for us to go back to the Gulf countries. The other thing is our regulations, honorable ministers. You know, in those parts of the world, the prince and princesses are more important than prime minister and ministers. Now, our protocol, at the protocol launch, only ministers, prime minister can go through protocol launch. So the prince and others can go through. So we had a situation where a prince accompanied by six ministers who carry his bags, they go through VIP, but he's asked to go the other way alone. And he's, to use this word, boys go through VIP. And they didn't say no. Let us change the regulations to recognize the different cultures and a different way of doing life, that these people are more important than the prime minister you are receiving. But we hope you can get support from honorable members, because this question is not going away. And it's with us all the time. We try to change it. So we hope that through your intervention, you can create conditions for them. Now, there's the issue of the Middle East. I'm told you'll be having a Palestinian ambassador very soon in the afternoon. It's a very, very important, difficult question. Basically because of the increased settlement expansion by the Israelis. Although Honorable Chair Magama was saying this morning that there's been an announcement between Hamas and the Israelis on exchange of prisoners. We hope this could create an environment in which they can go back to the negotiations. Honorable, we are watching the MENA region very closely, especially the spring. But we'd like you to take a view here of the different way the West addresses the developments in the Middle East. Very keen on Libya, very keen on Syria, but very easy on Yemen, on Bahrain, and others. And you ask them, honorable members, the question is very simple. It's national interest. It's national interest. Why don't treat what happened in Bahrain, Yemen, the same thing with Libya, is the issue of the national interest. Maybe South Africans need to discuss at some stage the issue of national interest. What are national interests? How do you project them? How do you protect them? How do you advance the national interest question? This is what you get all the time to say, but how does this country behave like this in Libya? We have it differently elsewhere. Question of national interest. And sometimes you see them reflected in the resolutions and other measures being taken by the West. On the Americas, honorable members, we have a lot of missions in the U.S. because it is by and large still a major single trading partner of South Africa. So you can see we have missions in there. And then you can see the mission in Latin America and the Caribbean. We are increasing our footprint in that area. The third slide in the beginning was showing the number of arrivals from that area and the business we are doing in those countries. We have 17 missions in the Americas, and we do believe that Mrs. Michelle Obama's visit to South Africa has created a very good image for us in America. Because if you recall, honorable members, before she came here, we had a very tough time with the 58 American Marines. Because for them, South Africa was such a very difficult country. He would be killed, he's with the kids, and all those sort of things. The type of image they were creating in the U.S. about South Africa was terrible. But, you know, after 2 days they were here, they left their arms in the hotels and they enjoyed themselves. So we hope that that visit and the corresponding positive publicity will help to change the perception in the U.S. about South Africa. Because now we understand that President Obama will be coming this way in the next year. But this will be the issue, I think, that will be discussed at different levels. We have also been urging them not to stop AGOA, this African Growth and Opportunity Act, because it did help to create economy in the continent. And then in terms of trade, that's it on in the reporting period, the trade between us and the U.S. was almost around $91 billion. And we always, like in the previous 4 years, to 2010, enjoyed trade surplus with the U.S. And we still have, by and large, a number of American companies here. At the last count, was 600 companies who are present in South Africa. And the U.S., although they still have problems, they still give us over $500 million worth of ODA in South Africa. We have still strengthened our relations with Cuba because they give us assistance in the area of health and health issues. And then in the challenges, what we have, although I've said U.S. still give us what you call ODA, but we know the economic problems the U.S. in. Honorable member talked about it earlier on, that maybe we need to interrogate the U.S. and EU and to see how far we could adjust our dealings with those countries. And the other challenge we have is that the new administration in Canada doesn't pay much prominence of attention on Africa than the previous one. So it's sort of relegated. And these are very worrisome developments, although, of course, we understand because of the global economic problem. We still do face a lot of non-trade barriers in our exports to Brazil and other countries we're dealing with in the Americas. So we hope that in the IPSA summit coming in over the weekend, Monday and Tuesday, we can discuss with Brazil on the NTPs with a view to lessen them. And on the next slide of 58, I was just reflecting on the trade between us and the U.S. I must also indicate that we're beginning to do a bit of work in Argentina and Mexico. We started very, very late, unlike in the U.S. and Brazil. So we do hope that those countries will become very significant. On page 59, members can look at on. I was just showing the trend in those countries, and page 60, the slight balance. I did talk on page 61, slide 61. I did talk about the tourism arrival. You can see the correspondence between tourism arrival and the trade we're dealing with these countries. It does show where you make a lot of trade, tens of people to visit the country. And then very quickly on Europe, which is very known to the honorable members, we have about 28 missions in Europe. This is an established relationship with Europe, stretching over centuries old, and we are still maintaining them with those 28 missions in Europe. We are moving more and more towards the Northeastern Europe, where we're opening more missions. And in the last year, we did pay a particular attention to relations with Russia, because we see Russia as becoming a very important country in terms of foreign policy, independence, but also because we and Russia possess similar strategic minerals. If you look at the global map of the world, where you study minerals, you see mostly in South Africa, in Russia, so there is a need for us to collaborate very closely on the management of those minerals. And on page 65, I just make a point about Turkey. Turkey is not only the crossroad of East and West, civilizations and seas, but Turkey is a very strategic country. It is almost approaching $1 trillion GDP. Very significant Turkey. And you can see its role in the MENA region. You saw when the Prime Minister went to Egypt, to Tunisia, they are learning the Turkish way, and also in Libya. I won't be surprised that the model of governance in Libya, Egypt, and Turkey will be Libya, Egypt will be Turkish model. Secularism with particular characteristics. So Turkey is flexing its muscle in that region. The problem we have with Europe is the slowdown in trade and investment. Quite understandable, I think, when I remember. And then to ask them to maintain their commitment towards Africa in terms of MDGs. Unfortunately, this economic meltdown comes on the eve, a few years before we go to 2012, on the MDGs. In terms of EPAs, honourable members, it was a difficulty in 2010-2011, but in the summit we had with the EU in Skukuza, a few months, weeks ago, we did find a formula to resolve the EPAs obstacles. So we hope that with a few things to be done, we can resolve EPAs. However, Slack 68, EU, Western Europe still remains, by and large, the important trading partner, coming just after Asia. Honourable members can see in 69 the slides we have in Europe. Then just some of our support services, honourable members. If you come to diplomatic training, research and development, this unit, although new, it has done fantastic work in terms of capacity of BRICO members and members from the neighbouring countries to preparing them. We have a regular training program for diplomats, heads of missions before they go. They come from the parliament, private sector, provinces, they come from municipalities. BRICO has to prepare them to go to missions abroad. It is done by this unit. And we also train protocol officials, not only from government. We have been approached by parastatals and other private companies to have to deal with the question of protocol. This is a very, very important question of protocol, because if not well handled, it can create terrible irritation in relations between us and other countries or entities. So we make sure that at least at that coal phase of interaction, there is proper understanding of norms of protocols to smooth interaction. And very significant, like on slide 72, was the efforts we have done to capacitate Southern Sudan. A number of officials have been trained from Southern Sudan and the DRC. And from time to time, our officials from diplomatic training go to the DRC and train them. So we've trained a single number of the Congolese in the area of diplomacy. We do hope that this could be our ambassadors in the DRC, that we train them with a view to strengthen relationship between South Africa and the Congo, and so is South Sudan. In fact, last week, we just have graduates from all East Africa countries. There are about 22 of them. We had a program for diplomats from East Africa. And then we continue enrolling our diplomats to increase the, what you call, page slide 73, to increase the literacy training. And a number of them who are doing the language training. Honourable members, in this world you need to
speak the language. Now French, as you know, is almost like compulsory in Pirco. And we do hope that honorable members also, with time permitting, you will learn some few languages. We did so because we had a problem way back to going to the Francophone market. So we had to get a lot of people. So we thought, no, let's empower South Africans with the French so that they can then work in the Francophone countries. And we can then see the results now. That's why ESCOM, MTN are very, very keen for DIRCO to assist them in this area. We continue, our members, to get youth in our energy programs and to enroll senior colleagues to do master's program at the University of Pretoria to, in a way, of increasing capacity in the department. And if you go to slide 77 on public diplomacy, again, this is a new area. In olden days, it used to be called, led by Rudy, it is called Information Department. In the NGOs, it's called Propaganda Department. But in the DIRCO, we call it Public Diplomacy. So this unit has grown over a period of time, precisely because we have to articulate our views as we increase our missions. Now we have 124 missions abroad, so we need a lot of backstopping to do those work. This unit is the one that, by and large, help us to arrange heads of missions meetings, to secure sponsorship, to secure interviews with the televisions, and to increase the profile and visibility of DIRCO. It is now the one, together with the GCIS, that is on COP17, and assisting our political principals as they travel abroad, both the minister and the two deputy ministers. They've got a division of research that help us to interact on page 78, slide 78, with the rest of the world. What we have found out in DIRCO was that policy formulation should entail also participation by other stakeholders from outside, civil society, academics, universities, researchers, those who should contribute towards our foreign policy formulation. And then I come to slide number 80 in terms of human resources in the public diplomacy. Those are the type of structure now we have to ensure that that entity can do its work. I don't know, then I'm going to the last slide so that we can then have the issue of discussions. Number 87, that's where we have the director from HR. That is where establishment of DIRCO is. DIRCO, as it is, we have 2,897 approved posts. We have filled 2,394 that present about 80% of the posts have been filled in DIRCO, and then 16% not filled, and 4% unfunded. Now, honorable members, you may say, but why do you have 464? What DIRCO have done in the last part was to encourage promotion within DIRCO. So you see, like at the bottom of that slide, you say on the left side, you say appointed 170, promoted 143, and therefore total 133 in that reporting period, after you have advertised 126. It's a very, very cautious decision to encourage people to come at the beginning and then grow into the department. The idea being to develop established professional department. Then on page 88 is the LRP component in the missions. 2,333 LRPs in the missions have been filled, 124 vacant, and 2,467 total. Now we say 57% of LRPs are South Africans. If it was India, they could be saying 2,000 of LRPs are India. If it was China, they could have been saying 98% of LRPs are Chinese. Now, in South Africa, we have not taken a view that this is a very, very important area for people to get jobs. You get a lot of Filipinos in our missions, Nigerians,
a lot of Kenyans, Ethiopians, all over the world, except South Africans. So honorable members, we are taking a view now that we should open up this position for South Africans, especially in North America and Europe, where salaries are just huge. Honorable member, LRPO, look at the staff. I'm sorry. Now, look at the personnel. I must, I'm very sorry about it. On slide 87, let's go back, please. This is South African 87. These are South African staff, both headquarters and abroad. On slide 88 is the staff we employ abroad to assist the work. So the point I was speaking to our members is, in countries like South Africa with a challenge of unemployment, those countries will deliberately hire their own people to recruit the staff. But because of our history, we have not done so. We can employ other people except South Africans. If you take London, for example, there are half of a thousand South Africans there. Who qualify? You go to the US, you go to Germany, it's a lot of them. But because of previous policies, which was intended to make sure that you don't have anti-apartheid people or Honorable Skosana at that time, activists, they don't join the missions. Honorable Skosana. Now, what we are doing, honorable members, we are changing what is called COPDA legislation. And we hope when it comes to change, you'll support us to change it to our point. This 57 has been a trial and error to say it is possible for somebody from South Africa to apply for a job in Geneva as a local staff and get a job there. So we have evidence that laws do allow. As a matter of fact, we have asked all our 24 embassies to give us information. What could be the obstacles for Saragwans as a local personnel? So this is an orientation we are taking. There's a bit of equity, honorable members, in slide number 89. Senior managers, 33%. We are working on the this issue, honorable members, of the senior managers in the department. We hope that by next financial year, we can push this towards 40% at least. On 1991, is that the turnover in the department. You can see top management is 18% turnover. The rest is manageable. It's because the former DG left, former Deputy Minister Susan Fanarava left, and Ambassador Makubela got promotion to the DG in Taurus. And then Mr. Mutlis fired. Money. This is the money part. What we have voted in, and what we have spent, and what is the variance. We spent 93.7%. We did discuss this with honorable members early in the year, and I'm grateful that Mr. Moodley arrived last night from Latin America to come and defend this position. Mr. Moodley, welcome. Now, on slide number 83, honorable members, is just to show once more where did we spend this money? Programs. Which program received what resources in the year and and then there is that column called under other revenue. Allocation is so much, and other revenue, 38.8 million. Mr. Mutley can explain what is that other money from. I hope it's not from bank robberies. Then on page 94, well, members, is the question that was also raised by the general in terms of expenditure. And you see later on, they talked about the delay in terms of rolling out the project. So, 794, we're trying to give an explanation of the delays which are not in our control because of legislations and bylaws, some of those countries. There's sometimes we delay in utilization of the funds which honorable members have voted for our activities. And then on slide number 99, the AG talked a lot about the document, yeah, that we did get unqualified audit with other matters that has reported. And he didn't find any unauthorized expenditure report, but he did find irregular, which Etienne from Treasury gave details where was those irregularities. But Mr. Moodley is here to take other members along. Now, the challenge we have is to maintain this unqualified audit, because other members, the standard is going high. You know, the AG is raising the bar. Every year, bar is going up. Can we cope with this bar going up, which is good, I think, for fiscus. And then the issue of continuing to make sure that we and AG agree on certain things. With all of us, we have a bit of a problem. Sometimes we don't know how much we can put in our strategic plan and business plan. Because foreign policy sometimes is very, very delicate. We have a debate with them. How much can we disclose if you are going to lobby? How much can we disclose to the public? Because when you give a document here, it's a public document. Now, there's a lot of sensitivity in connecting relationship. So it's a continuing discussion between us and AG into really how much can DIRCO disclose in terms of the program we're going to be doing into the coming years. Because we live in a very complex world where positions are contested heavily. That's the first thing. The second thing is on the ARF. We explained to the AGs that, you know, we cannot determine which country is going to come to us and say we need help here, because ARF has a particular objective. But at least I begin to understand that certain areas we just have a difficulty in disclosing information to the public before we can start activities in those areas. But what we have done in the past, there was an issue, a huge issue between us and Home Affairs, as you know, in terms of flow of funds from us to them. What have been done then? We've opened up a separate account in emission so that we don't have that problem anymore. The Achilles heel on DIRCO has been the ICP. We begin to see a very positive movement in that area. Of course, a lot of challenges that has made. Almost all our missions now have desktops, with printers, and there was voice over IP. So we do hope that with after services, more follow-up, we can have a function. In fact, it has really brought down the bill of DIRCO a bit down because of the new IT and software we've deployed. But also we want to report that in terms of capital and property, we have really made a bit of movement. Lesotho now we're fully finished building. I think May Africa, the back there, can testify that we have now the Chancery and Esther House in Lesotho. We've done official residence in Abuja, and we hope that we can complete in the next financial year renovation in London and Washington, including, I think, I don't know whether this is the last property in Venice Africa we've disposed in Namibia, but we did have a lot of properties in Namibia that we've disposed. And then we have tightened up question of security around our premises, and we have then developed plans for to make sure that access to the systems are protected. Then the last slide I really wanted to talk into is in terms of property also, property facilities, honorable members, you know, it costs DIRCO and the government so much annually. We are trying to investigate the possibility of strategy to acquire more properties between now and the next 15 years, if we can, for DIRCO. We hope it's an issue that you can come back to the honorable members in 2-3 months, a month's time, to come and share with you our strategy of how we think we can acquire properties abroad
the BRICS members, and like Lesotho, Swaziland. I see them buying a lot of properties abroad, not renting, unlike us. So we hope once we have this strategy, we'll come back to our own members and exchange ideas. Then the rest of the members is the question of protocol, how they facilitate the movement between South Africa and our guests, the type of pre-plans we need to do to ensure that our principals are, they get proper service across the board, both presidency, ministers, member of parliament, and various tiers of government when you travel abroad. What we want to end the presentation on, we had to go so quick because of time, but because we thought we should give more time for the discussion. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, DG, for your comprehensive briefing, as you would say. Honorable members, the DG has presented the annual report of the department. It's open for your engagement. Can I then, in the absence of any, declare the meeting closed? Okay. I invited questions and so on, and there was nobody. And so, I'm just thinking. I mean, since there are no hands, declare the meeting closed. Honorable Mubu, Honorable Dudley, did I see Sandra Sakoputi? Honorable Ngonyam, I didn't. Okay. The two. Okay, Honorable Mahau and Honorable September.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DG, and your team for, I think, quite a comprehensive report. And I think this coming on the back of the AG's report really gives you a lot of credence that you're doing a wonderful job. Just a couple of questions. I'm worried about the fact that we're still grappling with the issue of South Africans participating in AU structures and also in NEPAD and APRM structures, that we lacking South Africans in this regard. And this, despite the fact that we contribute considerable amounts to to these structures and as host of the NEPAD in this country, What are the major interventions that the department is undertaking to circumvent this? Because I think it's not fair that we're spending so much and then getting nothing out of it. I think our influence on these bodies will come out if we have a bigger presence there. You also mentioned that there was insufficient commitment by some African countries to NEPAD. Why do you think that's the case? Doesn't it then look like this is South Africa's initiative? Because we're doing so much for this, and then we're getting very little support from other countries. You also mentioned this establishment of SADC Customs Union. What impact does this have, if it's ever established, on SACU? And what will be the implications on the EPAs that some of the countries in the region have signed? I'll leave it at that, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Just linking back to what we just heard earlier this morning, the increase in irregular expenditures, I'm not sort of seeing how that is explained. Obviously, we understand it's not qualified, but clearly there's some issues there, and just how much of an issue are there and what's being done, and the procurement processes and contract management non-compliance. If you could just explain a little of what that really means to you in the department and what we're looking at there. I understand your explanation about the predetermined objective reporting, but the performance management, not all senior managers entered into performance agreements. I might have missed something there, but perhaps if you want to comment just on that. And the security and user management controls partially implemented. What does that exactly mean in terms of from your point of view, and what should we be looking at there? And then just that protocol that seems so inflexible, surely it should be designed to be more flexible, and what needs to be done there? What does that require to ensure? You were talking about people having to go, being separated out, going through different lounges and things. And then I'm just curious as to what we're importing from Saudi and Iran. We're obviously exporting next to nothing, but we're importing something, so I'm just wondering what that is and why so few exports when we're importing, obviously, something on a large scale. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Chair. We are hosting the Pan-African Parliament, and I'm informed that we have extended the lease with the Galaga Estate. And I know that at some time in the past we were about to undertake constructing the Pan-African Parliament. I just want to know how far is that project, because I didn't hear anything being mentioned about the PAP that we are hosting. Okay, and the last one is the South African Council on International Relations. When is this going to be established, if we can be given that information? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, DG and his team. I want to ask the following. The entire annual report assist us to look back on the monies that has been spent, but not just the monies that has been spent, really giving us an opportunity to reflect on whether the monies that were set aside has been able to meet the objectives set by the department at, when they said to us in what the program is at the beginning of the year, and at least at the beginning of the term of Parliament in 2009 and 10. I would want to gauge this report against that objective. Are we making progress? And the finances that has been set aside, does the finances assist us to meet our objectives? Because it's not just about did you hand in all the slips and so on. It's about the fact that the finances are taking us to where we would like to be. I'm asking this because we still have an unjust world. We still have the UN not being transformed. We still have the AU being done very many terrible things to. Despite the good decisions that has been taken by the AU to engage on, whatever matters, it helps. This report helps us to reflect on, but why hasn't this finances that you have set aside assisted us to have a different dispensation on Libya? On all of why did the UN do what they did? Didn't we have enough finances to, or was there anything else? So short of having to go through the entire list of the objectives that we have set, I would like to know if that has been met. And then I think because this time of the year we deal with the what is this funny word? Because, so the question is not, do you want more money? The answer is obviously yes. The question is, what we have got to reflect on is, in us putting together this report, we would want to have a particular objective in then saying to the Minister of Finance, with the power that we have now, we are absolutely not meeting our objective. And the problem is not human resources. The problem is human resources and anyone else. Chair, in that light that I'm asking, the questions that I am asking, because it does help us to reflect whether these finances and this division of revenue is meeting our objectives. I lastly want to say that, that which you have not met, what is the problem and what are the particular challenges? And very lastly, the things that the AG's office are saying, do you think that the Department of International Relations should be boxed into the same approach that the Auditor General's office is taking? I won't say if not, why not, and what are the relevant delays. I would want you to persuade us, but why, if do you think you should not be boxed in? And well, in fact, are there any difficulties with the box that you are being put in? Thank you, Chair. The DA is saying I'm asking too many questions, so I'll stop here.
No, Chair, I suppose it's an opportunity now for the department to engage with some of the questions that were asked earlier, and on matters specifically of the asset register updates that the AG said they discovered certain areas, the question of predetermined objectives and matters of supply chain management, as well as the statements and misstatements. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one or two general questions, Your Excellency. Yeah? First, it's... with this trade between the African countries, when I look at the graph there, it's instantly not gratifying. The gap is quite quite concerning. I do not know how we plan to really close that gap, because at times we do go to other countries, we a plane full of business people. We've done so many trips doing that outside Africa. We are not doing that when it comes to Africa with planes full of our own local business people to cultivate business interests outside. I don't think we are doing that when it comes to Africa itself or African countries. And I also want to juxtapose that with the new rivals, and that is China, India, and Japan, when it comes to the international power and security. I know that the other two are locked in BRICS, but Japan is not. Now, how do you reconcile that this trade within Africa, which we need to make sure that it does happen within the continent? And then you have these the concerns of the rivals coming into the continent. How do you deal with that one? And then there's also, you raised the question of national interest. I think that is going to be with us for a very long time. And unless we also face it really as a country, we will vacillate a lot when it comes to certain issues of particularly issues that deal with the geopolitical interests and international power. We will vacillate a lot when it comes to that. You were talking about the hypocrisy where the Western powers are concerned when it came to Libya, Egypt, Tunisia, but not Yemen. Again, you're also hinting on why are they doing that? But I think they have stated it very plainly that to them it's also, it's really a question of national interest. Because if you look at the question of oil in that region, these kind of pacts come from very far. I mean, 1955, you had the Baghdad Pact with Britain, Iran, Iraq, Turkey, Japan. The intention was to close the U.S. outside. The U.S. shouldn't get the oil. So that was the pact at that time. Now, these pacts change, but they revolve around the national interest of those countries when it comes to oil. My last comment is on the LRP, the locally recruited personnel. Now, you said in our situation it's quite different. We're still using the old policies. Now, I sense a jeopardy in the foreign policy, you see, because we cannot define and formulate a foreign policy here. Then you have those kind of people in those missions having to interpret it to those countries. I sense a jeopardy there that they cannot do that because they really don't. When you talk about the African agenda, what do you expect that person to really say? I think we need to change that. You're correct. We need to change it. We're not really pushing our foreign policies as we should if we maintain that status quo. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Chair. I think I would myself congratulate the department on the unqualified audit report. But if you compare with last year, there's some red lights coming on. So I'll congratulate you, but please extend to us this emphasis of matters the Auditor General referred to, the reasons why it happened. And maybe it can be, my next question can be one of the reasons. If you check Table 5.3, we will notice that a lot of manpower at the highly skilled supervision level resigned. Maybe that can be a reason, the manpower problem. I would like to ask the department, did they conduct any exit interviews? And what could be some of the underlying reasons for the staff to leave the department? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair Chairperson. Let me just commend the department on the issue of public diplomacy to say that now it looks as if it's a functional department. And I would want that the public diplomacy should be used more to attract cadets, because of I see we are always struggling when it comes to candidature diplomacy. Maybe it can alleviate the problem of why are we not filling the AU post and also other multilateral forums, and also the issue of the LRP. The other issue is the mission assets. I think the AG has raised the issue there. Maybe if we can get a view from the DG as well. And just two technical questions. One is that the AG spoke about non-compliance, and he said there was some disciplinary hearing with a suspension of an official with regards to irregular expenditure that was not explained. Can you just clarify that one? And the last one is the issue of close family members and officials' awards. What is the status quo, and is there any new policy that you are implementing? Because of, I think we referred to the issue of looking also at public service. What does it say about this one? So are you having any policy that you are implementing at the moment to make sure that come the next financial year, we don't revert back to the same problem? Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much, Honorable Members. Thank you for pointing that out, Honorable September. Let me just come again. We will deal with it within the study group of both the ANC and the DA joint. The issue of manpower, you would understand. Now, Honorable, no, because the matter has been specifically raised by them. So I'm responding to them specifically. Okay. But of course, COPE, our doors are open, COPE could join. No, in fact, COPE could come back to the East. honorable members, there's a timber faction and an old school faction. So, honorable members, let me just quickly raise perhaps two, three issues. One is, yes, DG, I am equally concerned about the issue of LRPs, but for a slightly different reason. Our experience when we went to Ethiopia last year, there were so many LRPs there, so many LRPs, that to me now, my understanding of how missions function, as opposed to their international relation and consular elements, they are also critical points of intelligence gathering for countries. I see one of your officials looks like almost like she wants to put her head under the table when I raise this matter. So, within that context, I don't want to elaborate, DG, or perhaps I'm just, you don't have to respond. Point is, it's a concern from that perspective as well. A matter that you also really need to look at. I mean, we have farm activities around our missions. We are farming, we have tractors there and so on, and farm boys and so on. So we need to be sensitive. At least hopefully those issues have been looked at. Secondly, I did not understand the issue of protocol lounges, just to latch on to what the honorable member said. Are the regulations promulgated by the minister or whoever that governs how protocol lounges are dealt with? Because I should think that these lounges the regulations should be dealt with by the department internally with their minister. I'm not aware of any piece of legislation that came through parliament that governs. So the point is, DG, it's a matter that I think you need to apply your mind to and move with it as speedily as possible, because we know how sensitive our brothers are from the East, because to them it's not only a protocol issue, it's a cultural matter and so on. So they're quite sensitive and allegiance and all these things. So we hope that you will really deal with it. And then the review. Currently, the EU is engaged in a process of review of ODA, of overseas development assistance. The thinking from there. Now we were in Europe just last week. Their thinking is to graduate South Africa out of those countries that need development assistance. Now we were at pains to, without being seen to be groveling for development assistance, but to impress upon them our unique situation of this unique character of South Africa of being, a giver of aid, but also a receiver of aid, straddling both these characters. These two nations and so on. So hopefully, at least our counterparts, the members of parliament, of the European Parliament, in fact, agreed that they would engage their commission to relook how they want to engage with South Africa in terms of the ODA. My question is, are we seriously, focusing on looking at a new deal, with them? Because what they seem to want to do really will be disadvantageous to our country in all respects. In fact, to them, they will be replacing completely the ODA with trade. And inextricably linked is the issue of the EPAS. So that's one. So over and above, perhaps the Americas, I mean the US, looking at the ODA, there's also the issue of Europe linked to the EPAS. It's a disturbing development. And then lastly, what you called the obstacle to FDI in particular, foreign direct investment, is the investment or absence of investment protection agreements. Now, what prevented us in the first place, you know, from having these agreements with these prospective investors? And has the situation changed? If so, what has changed? If not, why has it not changed? That's not just just on a lighter note, DG. That's always the structure of a question, a written question to the president or the deputy president or so. Honourable members, let us allow the department to respond to these issues, mindful of course of the time. Mindful of the time. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair, thanks honourable members for the questions you have raised. You have raised over 32 questions, and you have an hour also. I don't know how much time we have.
No, we're strictly speaking at 5 minutes.
Okay. So what we'll do, we'll try to answer those questions, and maybe you may want to, you can send some questions, written answers, or when you bring us back, we can discuss them, or bilaterally with the honourable members. Maybe, honourable Chair, can I propose that we deal with the issues that maybe raised by the AG, if our members don't catch up, because we think that it's very, very important that we respond to the questions that were raised by the AG. The AG raised a number of observations in our report, and of course, time permits, we'll then give other issues. Mr. Modi, do you want to deal with some of those questions raised by the AG as soon as you can? And then I think we do question of the PAP. Mr. Modi.
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I will just deal with some of the matters raised by the AG, and there's one or two questions from the Honourable Members as well regarding the finance and the corporate services matters. Chairperson and Honourable Members, just to say that with regard to the matters raised by the AG, all of them were factually correct. We have no, we do not disagree with the matters that they raised. In fact, the matters that they were raised in the management report for the department surrounded assets, material adjustments, then the matters around HR and the predetermined objectives. Now, last year when we received a clean audit report, there was no requirement for the audit report to include a statement on predetermined objectives, on material adjustments, and on the matters surrounding the assets as it was raised this year. So what's happened was that in the current financial year, in the 2010-11 financial year, of course the standards had increased, and we had worked towards complying with the increased standards to such an extent that our material adjustments have reduced significantly from last year. There was still material adjustments that were made, but there were two new items that came up in the material adjustments that was not there last year. One was the matter that the AG mentioned, that was lease agreements. If you look at our financial statements for last year, lease agreements projection was not a requirement. It came in this year, and then, of course, once the statements were tabled, the Auditor General came back to us and told us, but this is a requirement. So we went back with the unit concerned, and we went and recalculated the entire lease projections for the 5 years, and we included that. Of course, the Auditor General then reviewed the figures and so forth. They were in a general agreement with our figures, and we included that in the financial statements. The AG also mentioned in Note 42 of the financial statements, which really relate to the asset disclosures. If you look at our financial statement for the last financial year, that was not disclosed as per the agreement we had with the AGO in terms of the AGO requirements. But this year, when we had tabled our financial statements, they came back to us and they said, but this is a requirement. So then we went back and we disclosed it. Of course, we did the calculations and so forth, and the Auditor General then checked the calculations and we disclosed it. So there were more, those material adjustments were there. The one material adjustment that that appeared last year, which we were quite we were knowledgeable about, and which we had to correct after we tabled the financial statements, was the Cashwood Commercial Banks. Now, this relates to the balances of the actual cash available at the missions abroad. What we normally do is that we would go through a comprehensive process of reevaluating our cash that's available at missions abroad in terms of the foreign exchange rates. You would note that we, in our underspending, 77 million rands has been identified as underspending on the international transfers. That's because we budgeted at a certain rate, as the AG mentioned, and then during the year the rand strengthened. So because the rand strengthened and the some of the assessments had come down as well, it's resulted in us not spending that 77 million. The agreement with National Treasury, of course, is that all foreign exchange gains goes back to them. We can't utilize that, so we send that back to them. So the Cashwood Commercial Banks was the only matter that was there last year. We had to go through a comprehensive process, and we had made that adjustment in agreement with the Auditor General post the financial statements being tabled. Now, what we've done for this year is to ensure that we do not have such material adjustments at all in any part of our financial statements. We have taken the entire financial statement notes from number 1 to number 45, 47. We've put them on a spreadsheet, and we've looked at what the National Treasury guidelines is around that. We looked at our interpretation. We've already agreed with the new team. We have a new team of auditors auditing our books for this year on an interpretation, how we're going to interpret those notes. We are currently busy with our midterm financial statements, so we're going to implement that grid so that we don't have a situation where there will be material adjustments that comes in after we table our financial statements. So we're basically going to do that for this financial year. With regard to the assets, Honorable Chairperson and members, is that generally the assets, this difference arise in capital assets between head office and the missions is because of a timing nature. Missions will purchase the assets, and then they will advise head office, and then we update the asset register. We then give the asset register to the Auditor General as it is updated, and the Auditor General takes the copy of the asset register and they go to the missions to audit. But in the meantime, there may have been movements in the mission itself. New assets may have been purchased or assets may be disposed, which we have not factored into the asset register because we make the changes at head office, but the Auditor General will have a copy of the latest version of head office. So when they go to the mission, they find that those changes are there, and then they come back to us and we either agree or we don't agree, but in most instances you find that those changes have taken place during the time we had given the asset register to the Auditor General and the time they have gone to the mission and to contact the Auditor missions. There are, of course, a number of instances reported to us where the asset was not on the location that it was no recorded in the asset register. This is simply because assets are moved around from location to location, and the movement forms are not completed. For instance, we have a number of instances where meetings were held. Chairs from other rooms were brought into the boardroom. Now, that is, the Auditor General reports that as an incorrect location. But the asset register, of course, was not updated accordingly. Now, when we forget to move those chairs back and the Auditor General gets there, then he will note that as either a missing asset or an asset that can't be found, or you'll note it as an excessive asset in the other location. So those are some of the matters that were raised as far as assets. You would find that we did not, the Auditor General, after we had done the exercise for them during the audit period, they were comfortable that the risk that was there is lower, but we've agreed with them on how we're going to manage the process going forward. What we have done for the going forward for this year is that we had agreed our policy has changed so that we do an asset count every quarter. All missions around the world, as well as the head office, we will now, rather than doing an annual asset count, we will do an asset count every quarter. The information between head office and the missions then will be updated on a real-time basis, and the reconciliation between the accounting system and on the assets. So whilst we were doing them on a monthly basis previously, we are going to give more emphasis to that part of the asset management process. So those matters we've agreed with the Auditor General in terms of how we're going to address the assets part of it. So, I mean, the strategies, the Auditor General did mention earlier that the strategies are in there and we are in the process of implementing them. With regard to the information security and the information audits, indeed, the Auditor General is correct in saying that there was a partial implementation of the user account procedures, but this was the audit that was done in the last financial year. In the new financial year, an audit was done. We have improved all of that. We've given them the new policies. We've given them all the new documents that we had formulated. They are in general agreement with it. They haven't actually conducted the final audit on that. But just to say that the user account management policies have now been corrected. For the user, there has been a number of security features that has been implemented, such as password utilization, changing of password. We included a more complex requirement for a password, and of course the normal process of passwords being expired and a person not being allowed to the system when a password has been expired and the candidate does not change that password. As far as the super users are concerned, we've introduced logs and we've introduced restrictions on the user. That means a person who can't make changes to the system. There is a system of control mechanisms and a system of logs. So every person who does enter the system and to do any changes, it will be logged. It's then printed out an exception report, and the supervisors are able to control that to ensure that there's no irregular unwarranted changes to the system. Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members, with regard to the irregular expenditure, 526,000 rands was reported. Now, there has been a bit of a difference of view from the Auditor General and ourselves. We have, of course, submitted all the information that I'm going to submit to you to the Auditor General. For instance, Mr. Smith mentioned earlier that 240,000 rands was because we didn't receive 3 quotations. Now, the explanation is that we had requested for 7 quotations. And of the 7 quotations, there were only 2 that was received. I'm just trying to find the one. Let me start. Okay, let me start with the one for Vukandi Technology for the supply of toner cartridges amounting to 240,000, where the point scoring sheet could not be located. However, with that particular service, the lowest quotation was accepted. So that is why we then gave the Auditor General the fact that the lowest quotation was accepted, but they didn't agree that that was the process. They still stayed with the point that a point scoring sheet was required. Then there was a payment made to Accord for 58,000, and the finding was that there was no tax certificate clearance. However, Accord is an NGO, and they normally get a tax exemption letter from SARS, from Civil Revenue. We were able to produce the tax exemption letter to the Auditor General, but their view was that they needed a tax clearance certificate. So we had to engage with the court and the SARS now to determine whether a tax exemption certificate is equivalent to a tax clearance certificate. So that was just the one difficulty we had with regard to that. 6 payments to various different service providers to a total of 183,000, where we could not produce evidence that 3 quotations were requested. These payments were approved by the various different structures based on the actual quotations received. And, of course, in a number of them, the 3 quotations could not be received. So we provided that evidence to the Auditor General. But the view of the Auditor General is that if there is no 3 quotations, then it is considered irregular expenditure. 8 payments totaling different amounts amounted to a total of 43,000 rands, where 3 quotations were not requested. Now, what happened was because of the unreasonable and time effect nature of the services required, we had then written to the Director General for deviation. The Director General gave the deviation in 7 out of those 8 cases, but the Auditor General says that the reasons that was provided were not justified, and they recorded that as irregular expenditure. Now, just to say, Chairperson and Honourable Members, that with all of those cases, the entire 526,000 rand, in not one instant was the department did the department realize a loss. It was for actual services rendered. The goods and services were received. However, the question that arose was in the process that we had followed to acquire those goods and services. Of course, having had these discussions with the Auditor General, we have now tightened up the processes in the department as well. So where previously, when it was quite difficult for us to get certain goods and services, especially if the President decides to have invite a colleague over for a certain, some of them are part of the examples here, discussion, and we have to provide the necessary services at last moment, then the Presidency requests certain of the services, and it's very difficult for us to go and get three quotations, five quotations. So normally we look at what the presidency uses, we get the quotations from them, and we do the services. But now we've implemented measures where we will stop doing those things and where we will engage with the presidency. In fact, we've already started an engagement with the presidency on how we're going to work through this so both the presidency and ourselves do not have such a situation. However, all of them have gone through the channels in terms of regularization. The Auditor General doesn't agree with it. Now we are in the process of writing a comprehensive submission to the Director General to essentially regularize expenditure, but in not one instance did the department lose. The last matter that I would like to discuss from my side is the matter about the awarding of a tender to any family member. I must say that I'm not aware of that. It's the first time I heard that our department had awarded a tender to any family member or friend. It is highly possible that a official works in our department and had got, or company or something that he is involved in, had got a job, some tender from another completely outside department. I'm going to engage with the Auditor General to get that information and we'll take it further. If that is the case, of course, we will deal with it as per the provisions and so forth. But I'm unaware at this stage, the chairperson, of the details, but I will certainly look at it further. Thank you very much, DJ.
I know you had to close, but just a second on PAP. Ambassador Kuz.
Okay. DJ, if I may, I was just going to also talk to the issue of the predetermined objectives with regard to the African Renaissance Fund, and that even in the previous engagements with the Auditor General's office, we did mention that unlike other business units, it's very difficult at the beginning of the financial year to say that this is what we are setting out to do in terms of utilizing the African Renaissance Fund. The issue being that, one, the fund is regulated by an Act of Parliament and it's got clear stated objectives for which it should be used. But then, two, the projects that are largely funded by the African Renaissance Fund are projects that would have resulted in the commitments made by our political principals. So when those commitments are made, then the request comes to the advisory committee that then approves and then has the concurrence of both the Minister of International Relations and the one of National Treasury. So we cannot at the beginning of the year say these are the projects we are going to be doing for the year. It depends on the commitments that our principals will make when they are out on the continent. So that is why we cannot have predetermined objectives. And as well as in terms of having the SMART principles, when they proposals are received, we can get indications of the time frames, the outcomes that we want. But then most of the implementation happens outside the borders of South Africa, and their accounting structures may be different from those of South Africa. So sometimes some of these things we are not so very much in control of as the department. I thought I should mention that. Now, in terms of the Pan-African Parliament, as the honourable members will recall, that in the beginning there was a budget of 800 million that was thought is going to be the amount that would be needed to construct the Pan-African Parliament. So when we committed to host the institution, we also committed that we'll provide the physical structure where the Parliament would sit. Now the Parliament started off as it is right now. It's constituted of 250 members of parliament, but when it's then converted into a legislative body, the number would rise to 500. Now, the architectural drawings that have been received have been for a parliament that will sit 250 members, but also there has been a conscious decision that where we'll have the Pan-African Parliament, we must also use it as an AU precinct. As the Director General mentioned in his presentation, we are going to host the Nuclear Energy Commission for Africa. We have the African Parliament itself. We have the NEPAD Secretariat. We've got the African Peer Review Mechanism. We have ECOSOC, and then we have the Pan-African Women's Organization. So it is anticipated that when the Parliament is built, it will also serve as a precinct for all the AU structures that will be hosted by South Africa. So that is where we are at. Now, a site was identified in Midrand where even a foundation was laid that cost us about 50 million rands. But after the foundation was laid, the Department of Environment came and said that it was a protected site because we had a certain species of butterflies, and therefore we could not continue to construct the parliament on that site. However, later on, the former deputy minister, Sue van der Merwe, minister of public works, minister of finance, and then a minister of environmental affairs, came together, and the decision was that there has been a lot of developments in terms of what has happened in the area where already the foundation has been laid. So rather than restore the site back to what it was originally, it's then in our interest to actually continue with the structure as it stands. Now also, I think that now we are at a point where the four ministers would have to meet, endorse the decision, and then take it to cabinet. Once we have that from cabinet, then we can be able to then begin to budget for it. But in our interaction with National Treasury, it also transpired that the 800 million rands that was set aside before to be the one that we are going to use as a budget for the parliament was not going to be sufficient. And that was quite a while back. So with the developments having taken place, we may actually have to exceed the 800 million that was set aside. But the Department of Public Works and National Treasury are the ones that will come back to us and give us the exact figures that we will need. And let me also just mention that the area of the issue of the construction of the Pan-African Parliament is largely the responsibility of the Department of Public Works because they deal with government buildings. So we just, interact with them in terms of what the needs would be for the Parliament itself. So all those departments need to work together to be able to find a solution. And we hope that we will generate a CAP memo that will come to Cabinet to get the endorsement to move forward on this matter. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, thanks for the advice you gave. The Council, the questions we have noted, very important questions from all members. But because of time constraint, it is not possible, but we really interact them. We hope the Honourable Members at COP17. I saw the confusion from the Speaker asking that members of Parliament be accommodated from the 29th of November to the 9th of December to come to COP17. We hope that we'll see some from Portfolio Committee because this has a bearing on foreign policy, the COP17 itself. Thanks so much, Honourable Chair.
Sorry.
Possible, there must be time frames that are put to it. And also we know, because this question will keep on coming, Chair. And so I just wanted to say that please let us be given and the time comfort to the government.
Okay. No, honourable members, let's deal with those issues when we engage with the report, with our own report, where we will be able to have recommendations and so on. Lastly, can I request, DG, that you provide us with a report once Mr. Mutley has been able to collate this information with the AG about these incidents of family, that we are given a report about those incidents flowing from your own investigation into the issues raised by the Auditor General. Honourable members, let me at this point thank the Director General and his staff for work well done. You've done very well with an unqualified audit opinion. There are, however, matters of emphasis, but all of us are happy with the work that I think. I've heard members saying that indeed we are happy about the work that you are doing. We will be looking with the eagle's eye on the improvements that we expect will be taking place with regard to those. You will hear from our report if we have specific recommendations to make with regard to some of those issues and some of the comments that we will be making. In fact, we will deal with a bit of our report next week. As the committee. But thank you so much, sir, and your team.
honorable members. Thank you very much, honorable members. Lunch has been organized, or at least a finger lunch has been organized. So please feel free to join us, DG, and your team. Lunch will be here. Lunch will be here, so I would expect that the lady should be either on her way in or just outside the door. But can, yes, can I just look at two? We will reconvene and deal with the matter of the application of Palestine for statehood. We will deal with, we have a couple of presentations and so on, but we will start at two at the same venue. What the staff, because there has been a change of venue, so I suspect some of the people will be going over there. So somebody must go there and just show them, you know, this way. Thank you, honorable members.
Thank you.